You're listening to the Master Passive Income Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Breakthrough Investor Show. My name is Charles Rose Jr., and we focus on breaking through limitations and barriers to get you to that next level of investing. With me is William Palmer, my amazing co-host. And in today's episode, our guest will be talking about how he helped families invest in over $100 million in multifamily apartments to create income, reduce their tax obligations, and foster generational wealth.
That's right, Charles. And he also talks about the importance of living your best life and why it's important to surround yourself with others at a higher level than yourselves in investing. Let's get started.
Welcome to the Breakthrough Investor Show, where we guide you to financial freedom and break barriers in your investing to give you the secrets to success. And now, here are your hosts, Charles Rose Jr. and William Palmer.
William, what's up, my man? How you doing today?
I'm doing great, Charles. Blessed as always to be here. How are you doing?
Man, I am doing fantastic, man. I'm blessed to be alive and just to be able to interview amazing people and guests like the one we're interviewing today, man. I'm just like super excited to like dive into his story and to hear more on how he broke through that next level.
Absolutely. So I'm just super excited. Absolutely. I always love meeting other investors who I've never met before. So I've never met this investor, but his story sounds really interesting. Can't wait to hear it. He's into multifamily and coaching, has a podcast. It's going to be really, really neat. And I don't know if anyone has noticed, but there's a little bit of a trend with people we have on that are in the real estate and then end up having a podcast at some point or another. It's pretty wild, but I'm really looking forward to hearing his story.
Yeah. And the cool thing about that is, you know, a lot of the investors who end up in the podcast, they do it because they want to help people. Yeah, you could make money podcasting. Sure, you can. But, you know, as you know, with these podcasts, you may not make any money or may take a while before you do it. So, you know, what I like about our guest is he has a genuine heart for helping people. And, you know, to even be able to be on this podcast and all of the other commitments that he has, you know, he just want to share a story because, you know, William, can you believe he actually helped, you know, families invest over $100 million in multifamily apartments? Can you believe that?
That's wild. I don't know if you remember First RubeCon, Charles, when Dustin had me go up on the stage and I thought I was going to be in front of just Master Passive Income and silly me. Didn't realize it was in front of the whole event. And I remember getting up there and being like, Dustin, what am I doing up here? But it was wild because I was sitting next to a guy that had $1 billion run through his syndication business that he had only had in business for 4 years. And he was a full-time active duty firefighter in New York. And I just remember hearing that. And I was like, I have one house at the time. It just blew my mind that I was up there on stage with them and getting to like interact. It was incredible.
It's incredible, man. It's incredible. I'm just, you know, excited to bring on today's guest. And he's going to, you know, tell you all his story and share some insights to help break through the next level. So without further ado, man, help me welcome our guest today, John Kasman. John, what's up, man?
Hey, guys. Thank you for having me today, man. I'm excited to be here and appreciate the warm introduction. And yeah, listen, it's great to be able to use real estate to create passive income, to take more control over your life, and to talk about, you know, how I was able to do that and break through maybe some of the challenges that not just I face, I'm sure many people face along their way. So no matter where you're at in your own journey, hopefully you could take something away from this conversation that helps you move forward.
That's awesome, man. John, we're just super excited to hear your story, and I'm sure our listeners are too. So tell us more about your investing journey, man, and what initially made you decide to do it?
Yeah, so listen, I come from corporate America, like a lot of other people. Spent 15 years doing advertising and marketing for big brands, big companies. I worked at General Motors. I worked, you know, on brands like Nike, Coors Light, Mountain Dew, just to name a handful of them. And eventually what happened to me is, when I was at GM, I was there at the time when we went through bankruptcy. So seeing that firsthand, watching my senior leadership on the cable news outlets, talking about the state of the business, looking at my colleagues and my peers, you know, the anxiety that they felt every day about losing their job, that made me realize that we needed to have a plan B. And real estate became that plan B. It took some time for me to get started, right? It had some false starts there, but eventually we did get going with real estate. And ultimately what happened for me was I was building a small personal portfolio, and then the agency I was working at they also ended up going into bankruptcy. So even though we had massive growth, I was killing it. We were doing really great. There were some other issues going on above me that I didn't really know about. And that company ended up folding. And during that time, I realized what I was doing was working. It wasn't working fast enough or efficiently enough to help me insulate myself from job loss. So that's when I stepped back, made a bigger transition, and ultimately got into apartment syndication and really just raising money and working with other investors to scale into larger apartment communities.
That's awesome.
It's like you were forced to make a transition. So, I mean, pretty wild. What, and I understand you wanted to speed the process up, but what made you land on syndication to do so?
Well, I didn't know what syndication was, right? I know we were kind of talking about it before we hit the record button, but for me, it wasn't really syndication. I mean, to give you some context, my first property was a 2-unit building, right? So I bought a duplex. My wife and I lived in one unit. We rented out the other unit. The next acquisition was 2 years later, and we bought a 3-unit building. This is a pure rental. So our first full rental property. The next property, which was 2 years after that, was an 8-unit building. And this was commercial. I wanted to go into commercial because I knew what we were doing was working. And I had this inclination that if I could scale and go a little bit bigger, I could get better results. So I wanted to test it out. I also was aware enough that some of what was working was timing and luck, right? I bought that first one in 2012. I bought that second one in 2014. So I needed to get to the point where I really knew what I was doing as opposed to, you know, kind of feeling like I know what I'm doing, but kind of also getting lucky. So that commercial property helped me get there, right? I hired a professional management company to oversee that. It was 8 units. It was commercial. There are a lot more things there. The thing that happened with that 8-unit is I bought it right around the time this company ended up going under, which, again, I didn't know it at the time, but it was right around that time frame. But I also was kind of dejected. You know, I've been excited with the first two acquisitions, but with that third one, I was kind of dejected because we had saved around $130,000 for the down payment. And if you're a saver, you know, you save this money. My wife and I were making, you know, good money, but it wasn't crazy money. So to save $100,000 in a bank account and then watch that savings account go to zero, basically, I was like, we got to climb this mountain one more time and it's going to take even longer. So I kind of felt a bit dejected and I knew I wanted a faster way. So at that time when the company started going through bankruptcy, that's when I realized, man, I just put my money in this deal. Now I don't really have, you know, that reserve sitting in the bank account. These deals have to work and I'm equity rich now, but maybe I'm cash flow poor. We've got to figure out a better way. And that is what led me to work with other people. And part of it was in my day-to-day conversations with friends, they were seeing what we were doing and they were like, oh, that seems really cool. How do you do that? And I would tell them how to do it. And I could realize they weren't really as interested as I thought they were, but they wanted the benefits of real estate, right? They wanted to make the money, but they didn't want to do the work I did. Cause I'm like, oh, just listen to this podcast. Check out this book. Go come with me to this event, right? There's 3 events this month. Just come with me to 2 of them. They weren't doing all of that, right? I was the one out there gathering all the information, the education and the knowledge. And they really kind of wanted to ride the coattails of the research that I had done. So that's when I started to realize, okay, well, maybe there's a way to work with them where there's a win-win situation for everybody.
Nice. Yeah. So you were, I like what you said, you were potentially equity rich, but cash flow poor. So you were trying to maybe not reverse that, but get the cash flow rich also. That's awesome.
Yeah. And you know, the thing about that too, is it's amazing how you recognize that. And let's talk more about like what made you decide to, you know, sort of, you know, you're going to the constant theme of saying breakthrough to the next level and get into multifamily, so many other different types of investments. Like what made you decide to scale up and work in sort of in teams? We're not going to use the word syndication in this episode no more, William. Different words. Yeah. What was that thought process and decision making? Because, you know, people are listening and they want to break through that next level. They want to scale. Maybe they bought a duplex, just like how you bought one. A duplex was my first property as well too. But getting to that next level, why multifamily? And why do it? Why did you do it the way you did it?
Well, I'll tell you the very first insight I can share with your listeners on breaking through to the next level is you have to surround yourself with people playing the game at a higher level. At every instant of my investing career, I can pinpoint individuals who were pivotal in helping me gain the perspective and the confidence needed to take those steps. I mean, even going back to the 2-unit, I remember, you know, when we first moved to Chicago, I moved to Chicago in 2011. In 2012, we bought that 2-unit. Well, for that entire 9 to 12 months before we made that purchase, we were attending events. You know, I was going to meetups and all these different events. And there was one woman in particular, she ran an event. So she was there every month. I went every month. So I saw her every month. We talked every month. Hey, what's going on? How's this? How's your property? Where are you at? And those little interactions helped me get the confidence that what I was doing was right, that it could work. I wasn't going to lose my money. People would actually pay rent, right? All the little fears you have before you do your first deal. And that gave me the confidence to make that first investment, right? When I go to the 3-unit, you know, we felt pretty good. We expanded our network. But even with the 8-unit, when I talk about feeling a little bit dejected, that's when I realized I needed to scale up what I was doing. And I went back to that first person. I said, hey, listen, and to give you context, this person, I've known them since, again, 2011 or so. And I watched them build their portfolio from 3 units when I first met them. They have one property, a 3-unit building. When I first met them, they went from 3 units to 9 units. And then from 9 units to 90 units. And that was ridiculous to me. And I remember asking, how in the world did you do it? And as a matter of fact, I took it to breakfast. That wasn't even a conversation you have in person. Like, oh, how'd you do it? I was like, no. I said, can I take you to breakfast? I said, I want to sit down. I want to ask follow-up questions on this. And I fully, and I spent, like, I think it was like, I think that meeting was like a Monday. I think breakfast was a Thursday. So I spent the next 3 days just in my head coming up with all sorts of answers she was going to give me. Like, oh, she must have inherited some money, right? Maybe her grandfather passed away, left her a check. That's got to be it, right? How else could you do it? And when I sat down with her and asked her, she said, well, I've had these investors who've been reaching out from California for about 6 months. I wasn't ready. And then finally, I decided that I would partner with them. And we worked together. We put together a deal structure. And I basically went shopping. I bought these properties. They put up the money. I managed them. And we kind of have this JV partnership. And that was the first time I met anyone who had actually done that. Now, I'm sure I met people at these meetups who had done it. But I didn't see them do it. I didn't see them grow. I didn't see them scale. It wasn't relatable to me. This woman was my age, actually a little bit younger than me, by the way. So this wasn't, again, wasn't her grandfather. It was some people in California. And I'm like, oh, well, how'd you know them? He's like, oh, they found me on BiggerPockets. What? They're random people out here in the world just looking at people online saying, hey, I got money. Will you invest it for me? So that was a seed that was planted, right? And a very powerful seed that was planted. 1 month later, I met the individual who ended up becoming my mentor. And that individual had raised $1 million for their first deal. So he took this thing in theory. It helped give me a blueprint of how to do that. So that made it very real to me when you talk about the breakthrough. So there were so many times when I didn't, you know, I lost confidence in what I was doing. And I'm like, you know what, it worked for him. It worked for her. Maybe it doesn't work for me. And when you have, you know, challenging situations, it's easy to look at someone else's situation and say, well, it's different. Well, that's different for her. You know, she's got a big network on BiggerPockets. So she's very sociable, right? She runs this meetup. She's got a lot of connections, of course. Oh, this guy, well, he's just, you know, whatever, right? He's connected, or he was in New York, or whatever it is, right? It's easy to try to find validation for why someone else can do something and maybe you can't. Even a podcast. I know you guys are kind of joking or alluding to that, but it's easy for Charles and William to do this podcast, right? They're personable. They can network, whatever. Oh, of course, John to do a podcast. He's outgoing. He's a speaker. It's easy for us to look at what other people are doing and say, that's for them. It's not for me. Even subconsciously, even if you want to do it. Yeah. And the thing we have to do is we've got to get out of our own head. And that's why it's so important to surround yourself with people who are playing the game at that level so you can strip away that negativity. You've got to build the confidence in yourself to do it. And those relationships were, I think, vital because, and particularly because I met these individuals when I met them, right? And in the order and the sequence. If I don't meet the girl with 3 units and watch her go from 3 to 9 and then from 9 to 90, maybe I don't think this is possible. If I meet her at 90, I'm probably not even thinking, oh, I can do that. Because I went from 2 to 5, right? She went from 3 to 9. I went from 2 to 5. And then I went from 5 and I added 8 units. So I went to 13, right? So watching her kind of scale like that made it realistic for me. And I knew that the secret ingredient was getting investors. So when I met the person who had gotten investors, like, oh, well, I guess this is just lining up very nicely for me. And that's when I ended up, you know, really taking a big leap forward.
Man, that's amazing how you mentioned too that you were just, you know, talking to someone and how we go through all these things in our mind, like, oh, they're only successful because, you know, they got an inheritance or because of this, because of that. I can totally relate to that, man. Like, you know, I remember before I got into private money, I had bought my first two properties. I was at three units. One was a duplex, one was a single family home, one unit. And I didn't have any more money left. And I was just like you mentioned, surrounding yourself with the right people. I went to one of them. I went to Real Estate Investors Association meeting, and I met this guy who went from like one unit to like 22 units in less than a year or something like that, or 24 units. And so it was easy for me to say, oh, you know, well, he probably has money, or he had like a small tech company. And so I was like, oh, he probably just, you know, used the money from his company. But when I dig into it and I found his story, he was using private money lenders, right? He was using, in other words, private investors to be able to scale his business up like that. You know, when I was just thinking, oh, maybe he just came from money or is his business. So I like how you mentioned that, because, you know, that's a part of breaking through next level too, is, you know, breaking through those like mindset challenges, right? So beyond that, would you say that you had any like big like mindset challenge or shift that you had to overcome in order to become a breakthrough investor?
Yeah, there's a really good quote. I'm going to butcher it, so I'm just going to make it my own, right? But there's a difference between being interested in something and being committed to something, right? Mm. So there's the analogy they use of breakfast, right? It's like, you know, the chicken is interested, right? The chicken is vested, but the pig is committed, right? And when you think about it, we've got to get committed. You know, if you only want to invest in real estate, if it's convenient, if you can look at a couple deals a week, you know, a couple deals that your broker or agent sends over, you know, go check out a deal and the numbers work out great. Okay, you're interested in real estate. Committed is, I am going to analyze X amount of deals. I'm going to acquire a property. I'm going to do whatever it takes, however long it takes. That is a different mindset. And for a lot of people, you've got to shift that mindset. And the beautiful thing for me that happened, and I think you've got to do deep work on yourself internally, right? Know who you are, know your strengths, but also be honest with your weaknesses, right? For me, one of the things is I'm just not a quitter. That's great in many instances. In some instances, it derails me because I might keep doing the same thing over and over. It's like, dude, you know the door is open right there. And I'm just banging my head against that brick wall behind Charles, right? So I've had to learn one important thing, right? And that's to surround yourself, not just with great people playing a game at a high level, but individuals who can provide you with perspective, right? Getting mentors, getting coaches, and being truly invested. So I believe in paid mentorship. I think it's absolutely critical if you really want to scale. If you just want to buy one house or one building, two unit, by all means, you can go out there and do that. You know, I did not pay anyone to help me become a real estate investor until I already owned 13 units myself, right? And because I knew the leap to the next level, which was a leap, would require a completely different approach. And I think it's important to, you know, lock in and get that when you need it. So for me, one challenge that I faced is I actually tried to do way too much. So to give you context, at this time, my company is getting ready to go through bankruptcy. I had just closed on this 8-unit building, and I had just actually invested into a flip project. And what I didn't mention with my breakfast with my friend, she talked about scaling there. And I asked her directly, I said, well, hey, you know, I'm looking to scale. I'm running out of my money. What are your thoughts there? Should I raise money? And she said, well, John, there are two ways that I know that real estate investors have been able to scale their portfolio when they don't have as much money themselves. One, take the money they do have and flip it, you know, buy some flip projects, flip it, and then use that money to invest in longer term holds. Or partner with other investors. I had the bright idea of doing both at the same time, right? So by the way, did I mention I had two kids now in diapers and, you know, my company was going into bankruptcy?
You want to talk about a full
thing. And I still had the 13 units that I acquired, right? So good Lord,
I'm the job.
I bit off way more than I could chew, right? And the flipping—
That's a combination of banging your head in the wall and being committed.
Yeah. Well, and the thing was, you know, with the flip, I knew I didn't have any experience flipping. So I actually partnered with another developer and he had a whole system. So I was actually more of a passive investor in his case because he was doing all the work, which worked great in theory until that project imploded. And then I realized I was the only person who had a monetary commitment to this project. So I had to pick up all the pieces and get it done. So At that time, you can imagine with all that going on, this project starting to fail. The 8-unit actually didn't perform as strong as it was supposed to. I made a couple small errors, which, you know, when you start scaling up, sometimes you're going to make a little bit of errors here and there. And the big point is my money was not coming through like that. All the money I made from my W-2 job, I poured into the flip project to try to get it done. The money I thought was going to cash flow was not right. I'm putting all my money into these projects. And I got a little depressed and I lost my confidence. And some of this, even with my mentor, I didn't even want to share this with my mentor because I felt like it was such an idiotic move on my part to take all that on. I was embarrassed to talk to him about it, right? And I ended up coming across another gentleman who was kind of like, I guess, a career coach or a life coach, if you will. And we kind of just did like a session or two to start. And I found myself just venting to him because I didn't want to talk to my wife about this. You know what I mean? This is like, I just got to suck it up. And I'm a former wrestler. So for me, you just don't complain. You know, you put that, you know, put your big boy pants on and figure it out, get it done. And I was carrying all this stress and anxiety. And it changed, I think, who I was during that time period. So I would sit in these sessions with this guy and I would just vent. And I'm like, man, do you understand? I'm about to lose X amount of dollars on this project. This is going wrong. And I'm just kind of going off. And this guy would just look at me very intensely, you know, just super intense. And he would say these little quotes, man, colloquialisms or whatever. And I'm just like, are you not listening to me? Like, I don't have time for your random thoughts. But one thing he said to me that really, really stood out is he said, it sounds like you're failing forward. And I had never heard this term before. And it sounded like complete trash to me. And I was pissed when he said it, right? I'm like, failing forward? Man, didn't I just tell you I'm about to lose like, you know, $50,000, like, that's the best you got for me, is it sounds like I'm failing forward. And I'm looking for answers, right? I don't know what I'm expecting this guy to tell me, but I'm looking for a solution. And this guy tells me this thing about failing forward. And what I recall in that moment was I walked out like, I'm not coming back to this guy. What a quack, right? But in reality, it made me realize that all of these moments are temporary. And as a wrestler, I lost a ton of matches. I lost a lot of matches, especially early on. But there was a quote in our gym that said, those who stay will be champions. And there was another quote that says, tough times don't last, tough people do. And all of these things are experiences, they're moments in time. Just because you've done a bad deal doesn't mean you're a bad investor, right? Just because you lose money doesn't mean you're a bad investor. And I think psychologically, that's what happens, right? We want to layer this up to who we are. This is our identity. When I had my, you know, my 2-unit where, you know, I doubled the value. Hey, John Kasman, amazing investor, right? The 3-unit did well, sold it for $100,000 more than what I bought it for and did no work to it. Oh, man, I'm crushing this real estate thing. I should go full time, right? 8-unit didn't go as great as I wanted it to, but it's okay. Okay, right? The flip project, it made me question everything about myself as an investor. And with my confidence shook, as I'm trying to scale a commercial multifamily syndication business, I really question whether or not I could or even should do it. Because now I don't believe that I'm a great investor, right? I've got, how am I telling myself I'm a great investor? Hey, you should work with me, you should partner with me, when I know I'm losing money on this project over here, right? So psychologically, I'm having this internal battle. And that was a huge roadblock. And I think subconsciously, I held back my own growth. And part of what I realized in that moment was I had to address this issue first, get this flip done off the books. And it took a while. My wife and I also bought a house that we were gut renovating, that we were going to live in, bought it for like $400,000. This became a $1 million house. That was not the plan. It just ended up, you know, becoming a $1 million project. It took 3 years to get that done because I had to finish the flip projects, all the money there, then take the new money, put that into this house. So I could never get the business kind of humming the way I wanted to. And all during this time, mentally, I'm just wrestling with my internal belief of who I am. So that confidence is absolutely critical. And one way that I was able to get over it is by having better conversations with the mentors and the people that I trust and believe in. Two is you got to just face these challenges head on. You know, the flip projects, you got to lose money, man. It's done. So lose as little money as possible, as opposed to, you know, messing around and losing even more money. Just rip the Band-Aid off, get it done, get it off the books and go. You're not the first investor to lose money. Almost every investor I know who's invested for a period of time has lost money at some point, whether it's investing in stocks, houses, flip projects. And when I talked to my mentor and learned later on that he lost money on one of his first big projects, that made me feel so much better. Not someone else's pain and sorrow. And I don't want y'all to be like, oh, this dude lost that much money. Ooh, I only lost $2,000. I'm not saying that. But it's to say that you don't, that doesn't define who you are. And, you know, my mentor, he has a quote that I love and I actually stole it, but he says to himself in his affirmations that he's a billionaire real estate investor, even back when he was in the negative from a net worth standpoint. And when I was talking to him and what I told him, which I don't think he even thought about at this point, I said, it's not that you're a billionaire real estate investor or you're trying to, you know, just talk it up into the atmosphere. It's that you're going to think and act like a billionaire real estate investor would think and act. If you're a billionaire real estate investor and you lose money on one project, are you going to close up shop and say, well, I guess I shouldn't invest? No, you're like, damn, that sucks for that project. All right, well, hey, let's go out and find another one, right? And that's the mentality, right? The difference between winners and losers is the winner plays until he wins. And that's mentality you've got to have.
Yeah, I know so many people when I started out that when I started, that is exactly what happened to them. They got a house and it did not go well. Whether that was poor decision on location, dollar amount, purchase price, tenants, whatever it was, it didn't go well. And they were really pretty large naysayers. And I was fortunate enough to be listening to a lot of podcasts, Dustin's Bigger Pockets, all these like pretty common podcasts that you listen to. There's so much great information there. And I heard people say the same thing and they just pushed past it. And it was absolutely beneficial. I don't know about you, Charles. I'm sure you had the same number of people telling you that that's a great way to lose money. I don't know how many times
So many times, William. I can't tell you how many times, too. I even have a friend who was an investor who invested in some alternative investments, not real estate, because he had a bad experience and he just completely gave up on real estate. And he tells everyone, like, don't do real estate. It's bad, right? And so that's so true, John. And I'm glad that you comment on that, because a lot of times, you know, we do place our identity with these properties and the business. And so if we have a failing property, then we believe that we're a failure and we can't do better and we can't move forward. And so I really love how you touch on that, because I think a lot of people, especially the type of people that we created this podcast for, as they're trying to break through that next level, they go through those mind battles, right? Battlefield of the mind. And that blocks you from getting to that next level, man. So, man, I mean, dude, you touched on so many different things. What would you say, you know, to sum it up? Somebody's listening right now. They want to, you know, they want to get started. They want to become a breakthrough investor just like you, John. What would you say is the biggest piece of advice that you would give to that person to become a breakthrough investor?
The biggest thing I could tell you is identify your number one challenge from getting the results you currently want today and attack it and be open-minded to the options. A lot of people might say, for instance, deal flow. Hey, I'm just not seeing enough deals or any deals that work. Well, be honest with yourself. How many deals are you looking at? How many deals are you analyzing a week? If it's not enough, let me help you. It's not enough. That's the answer. It's not enough. So the next question is, well, how do you analyze more deals? Okay. And how you go about that is up to you. It also could be maybe you're not the person who's analyzing those deals. Maybe you can partner or team up with someone. Maybe you need to hire an analyst. There are lots of different things that can become solutions, but you have to identify what that number one problem is and then focus on a solution for that problem. Most of the time, people just keep doing things, but they're not taking, you know, inventory on what's working, what's not working. They're not tracking the data, so they don't know what's going on, and that hurts them. We have a mastermind, a lot of our mastermind students, we talk about this, and we get into kind of where you're at with your numbers. You know, are you analyzing deals? Are you not getting the results you're looking for? But how do you know this if you're not tracking it? So when I was getting started in commercial multifamily, there were a couple things that helped me. One is I used to track every deal I analyzed. I used to put into a spreadsheet. I would track GRM, because it was sometimes hard to find the cap rate. So I would track GRM, and then I would track just different data points. And I put it on a spreadsheet. I would put the submarket or the neighborhood. I put the property. You know, I put all those key things. And what I was doing was I was building kind of my own database. And I could see how many deals I analyzed. I could see, you know, what the trends were that were popping up. I could see, hey, you know what? The GRM in these areas seems to be this. So guess what? When I found a deal where the numbers exceeded what I had in my database for that submarket, I knew it was a good opportunity, or I knew that maybe this was a motivated seller. So that helped me get traction there early on. But I would say track it. But also, if you're not getting the results, now it's time to make a change. If you go, you know, maybe two quarters or even one quarter, and you've been analyzing plenty of deals, you've been putting in offers, you've been doing all these steps, and you're not getting traction. Now you need to step back and say, okay, what other adjustments do I need to make? For me, it was changing markets, which I had to do multiple times. Sometimes it was sub-markets. Sometimes it was a city. Sometimes it's, you know, hey, is my deal criteria too tight? But you have to get that feedback from actually taking the steps. If you're putting in the work, then you can make little adjustments.
That's phenomenal. Well, John, we're kind of winding to the end of the episode here, but there's probably something that we've missed. Is there something that we haven't touched on or talked about that you think would be really good for our audience to hear beyond what we've talked about just now?
I think the biggest thing is figuring out who you are as an investor. You know, if you have those trepidations and those concerns, again, I'm not asking you to just wake up and be confident in yourself. That takes time, right? It takes work to become confident. For me, when I was going through that lull, one thing that helped me was I had to pull out my resume and remind myself who I was, right? Literally from a professional standpoint, you know, I mentioned working at two companies that went bankrupt. I actually never missed a paycheck. You know, GM went through a structured bankruptcy. When that company, the second company I was with, the owner paid me out of pocket, right? So I've been working since I was 13 years old. I pretty much never missed a paycheck in how many ever years that is, right? And the point is, I had proof that I was a hard worker, that I was not a quitter, that I would figure it out, right? I had the mentors, I had the people around me. I had the blueprint, I had the work ethic. So I had to rely on those things. I had the accolades, right? I've been recognized in magazines. I'd helped, you know, win awards for different brands. So I had to rely on that resume and track record to remind myself who I was professionally so that I could have the confidence to go out there and do what I need to do. The second part of that was I didn't have to be an all-star. You know, if there were things that I couldn't do or other people were better suited at, I could lean on other people. So as an investor, I think one thing everyone should know is there are so many strategies to leverage real estate investing to help you with your financial goals. If you're trying something right now and you're not getting the results, step back and figure out, you know, what are you better suited to do? If you're a busy professional, maybe flipping houses isn't the best thing for you, right? Maybe think about investing more passively, being a private lender, being a limited partner on a syndication type deal. Those things may be better for you. If you don't have the money to do those things, but you got plenty of time, all right, maybe wholesaling, maybe flipping wood work better for you, right? But figure out your strengths. What do you have? Either you got time, you have money, you have experience, you have knowledge, you have resources, connections. Figure out what you bring to the table and then leverage that skill set so that you can get the results you're looking for. I think too often people waste time trying to, you know, do what I did or do what you're doing, Charles, or doing what you're doing, William, right? Don't just run the play that you heard somebody else speak about, right? Figure out what works for you and your unique situation and then try to get the results there. And make it easy, man. You can cheat. Like, you don't have to build it all yourself. You know, our first large deal, we partnered with other investors, right? And that helped tremendously. It was a $16 million deal. And if you would have told me the next deal I did after that 8 million or that 8 unit deal was a 192 unit deal, I would have laughed at you like, you're out of your mind. What? But I had to change my mindset. We had to change the approach completely, right? And that allowed us to go in a different direction and scale in a way that felt natural. But when you say it out loud, it sounds crazy. And the truth is, you just have to be willing to be on a team, right? Instead of trying to be a one man show or one woman show. If you're willing to be a part of a team to achieve your goals, you can move much faster.
Man, that's awesome, man. Like, William, I don't know about you. I feel like this was like a coaching session. Like, you know, our listeners are going to be like listening in and like literally getting like a free coaching session from John. No, John. Absolutely. John has been absolutely fantastic. I'm blessed to meet you for the first time here, but I want to continue hearing from you. I want to continue learning from you. And I think our audience, they're going to want to be doing the same thing. So how can people find you? What's the best place to get in touch with you and stay connected with you online?
Well, I mean, the easiest thing is to go to our website, chasmincapital.com. We do have a mastermind program where it's actually very cost efficient. It's $89 a month. So we try to make it very, very attainable for anyone, even if you're already a part of other groups. I just want to connect with other people, have conversations like this, dive into deals. It's there. We also have a sample deal package available. So if you want to wrap your head around being in syndications, either on the active side or the passive side, you can check that out and it'll start to give you a sense of the deal structure and the framework and terminology. But just go to chasmincapital.com/sample deal. You go to the website and just explore and you can get more information. And last but not least, we have our podcast, Multifamily Insights, which is available anywhere you listen to podcasts. So Multifamily Insights and chasmincapital.com.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you so much, John. And let's stay connected, man. Are you coming to the Real Estate Wealth Builders Conference next year, man?
Man, I will be there. I'm excited to join that event to just kind of close that up with Dustin. So excited to be there. And yeah, I'll see you in early 2024. Yeah. Springtime.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, March, 14th through 16th. So yeah, man. We're looking forward to connecting with you more in person as well. So thank you so much, John, for being on the show, and we'll see you soon.
Absolutely. Hey, guys, thank you for having me. And listen, if you guys are struggling with the breakthrough, just know every investor you know has had the same challenge. Some may admit it out loud, some will not, but learn from us. Surround yourself with the right people that can help you understand what you're going through mentally, figure out what challenges you need to overcome, and then be committed to the actions. The biggest thing is just taking massive action. If you're willing to do that and you're willing to surround yourself with the right people, you can get the results you're looking for.